This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
It was Gugu, McKenzie, myself, Billy and Denise, Burse, who plays Elder Kelly. We were all just sitting in a row and we just looked at each other and like, guys, when are we going to get this opportunity again? If they say that we won, we have to bum rush that stage and just get up there.
Hello and welcome to Black Mirror Cracked, the podcast for all your Black Mirror needs. My name's Sachandrika and I'll be your host. Today we'll be talking about San Junipero. The more eagle-eared amongst you might have noticed that with this podcast, we'll have covered every Black Mirror episode that's gone out now. So this will be the last podcast for a while, at least until we know what's happening with season 5. So at least we have a bit of a bumper episode for you today. I'll be analysing San Junipero with my colleague, journalist Harriet Fluke, and also Wes from the show, played by Gavin Stenhouse, will be Skyping in to tell us not only what it was like to work on the show, but also what it was like to go to the Emmys with the whole gang, because this was the episode that won Black Mirror its 2 Emmys, its first 2 Emmys, and certainly not its last 2. So it's great to hear from him what that was like.
I was a huge fan of Black Mirror. I mean, I remember when that first episode came out from season 1. It was so, I don't know, that it just caused such an uproar, and it was so refreshing to see, you know, because I've been a fan of Charlie from back in the day when he was writing his reviews, you know, and then for him to put, you know, the money where his mouth is and then create something that is just mind blowing. And every single one was so unique in its own way. Every episode, it's just, I was just floored and amazed at how one mind could come up with all of that. So when the breakdown came through and the audition came through for San Junipero, I was just like, I don't care what it takes. I'm getting this. And you know, it's never that way with auditions. You can try as much as you want, but if you're not right for the role, you're not right for the role. But fortunately, I happened to be right for this one.
Did you have like the whole script to hand, or did you only have parts of it when you first got it?
God, I don't think. Yeah, no. I definitely didn't have the whole script. No, I just had the parts that I was auditioning for. So I had no idea what the whole premise was and what the twist was going to be until I got the actual job.
When you got onto set and you got more of a sense of the story, what did you think of it? Because it must have felt to a Black Mirror fan, oh, this is really different. I don't know where it's going. What's happening?
You know what? On the face of it, I actually felt, when I read it, I was like, oh yeah, this feels like Black Mirror. But there's something in the way that Owen directs his pieces and his subjects that it, like, he brings out this really lovely kind of sensitivity into the project. And I remember when I first got called into the ADR, so afterwards when you do some voice looping, if they don't successfully get something that you've said on set, then the actor will go back in, often months later, to do something called audio looping, which is where you have to match your lines in a studio space up to an image being played on a monitor. And that was the first time that I'd seen any of the kind of finished edited pieces together. It was so much more kind of heartfelt than I thought it was going to be, because I thought the whole thing was going to be a bit more about, you know, the life, the afterlife being in computers and all that kind of thing. But actually the story became more about Gugu and Mackenzie's relationship to each other. And I thought that was amazing. Owen did that again as well in the second suit. Be Right Back. Yeah, that's the one, yeah. With Donald Gleason. Yeah. It's such a beautiful episode. And I cried at the end of that episode. It's so heartfelt and sensitive. And I think that's definitely something that Owen brings to his work. Because I felt that in San Junipero as well.
So yeah. that makes sense. So again, with a world filled with Ashbots, which you've just described to us, the San Junipero, it made me think, among all the lovely things which it made me feel, which we will definitely get into, but where it links to Be Right Back is the keeping hold of something that's gone and somebody who's been lost. And
even Kelly does that, doesn't she? She can't let go of husband.
Yeah.
Even when Yorkie's there and it's basically saying, I'm here to help you.
To move on.
She still can't because she's still like, no, I've got to. It's only at the end. She physically does it.
Yeah.
And she mentally does the other one.
Exactly, yeah. There's more of the emotional journey, I think, is made more explicit in San Junipero. What are the things we like about San Junipero?
The music.
Yes.
Big fan of the music.
Yeah.
Every time it comes on, I like have a little dance in my seat.
So Heaven is a Place on Earth, you're a fan of.
Yeah.
Charlie Brooker did say they tried to get Prince sign of the Times, which I don't think would work as well.
I think it'd been a bit too melancholy at the end. Yeah. I think it'd have been a bit too like, oh.
So I read something the other day about San Junipero and Heaven is a Place on Earth, that if you couldn't get that song, you'd be distraught. Mm. Are there any songs out there for both of you, either of you, that could be essential to a future episode?
Wow.
I like that as inspiration. It did make
it one.
It's very important.
Occasionally there's some songs we couldn't get actually in San Junipero. We couldn't clear a Prince song at the time. We wanted Sign of the Times in there. We couldn't clear it.
I think you need the music to keep it up because otherwise it is just an incredibly tragic story.
Exactly. It's... And what I noticed as well is that all the songs kind of have like a reference into the moment they're playing at that time. So like Girlfriend in a Coma.
in a box.
What's the bit with that like, amazing montage she does?
Mm.
And it's the bit where each song and each particular look, this is the bit where I started to notice actually that it wasn't all what it said it was, because I was like, these are very 80s specific looks.
Yeah.
There's not like, you know, when you look at Kelly, what she's wearing, it's her kind of very much her style.
Yes.
And it's a very like individual, like she's gone back into what she wants to do and it's herself. When Yorkie's replicating it, it's very much like, this is a look. No, this is very precise. it's that whole thing where it's actually you can tell she's still trying to like explore herself more at that point.
Yeah.
But then you kind of realise, this is not all it's meant to be.
That was some hair.
Well, that was a lot of effort on the hair and makeup department for sure.
How long were you being backcombed? Have you ever been backcombed before? Was that what
you were doing? I'd never been backcombed. It was a combination of hours of backcombing, different stages through my head from back to front, and then blow drying, and then like some kind of like spray, and then more back comb, and then just yanking it out of my skull.
New wave. It's very new wave. But...
yeah. When we were doing hair and makeup tests, it was, if you can imagine it was even more intense than that. We were going back and forth between hair and makeup and Owen Harris, the director. And at first we kind of settled on a bit more flock of seagulls. So it was like high at the sides. And then we showed it to Owen and he just kind of took one look and said, I think that might be too much. And then we decided to just settle on this overall vumph of a just massive piece on my head.
Yorkie never really got the chance, did
no,
she?
She didn't stand a chance. She's terrified when she walks through.
Yeah, it's a really sad story, but then it's also so hopeful. Why do you think there's such an emphasis on escapism? Like, what kind of world do they live in?
Well, I think if you look at Yorkie especially, she's never had the chance, really, has she? So she's getting to do all the things that she wants to do. So for her, it's actually escaping her own body. And it's actually because she must have watched all this, or like her life happen, but not enough to do anything. So like for her, that's just pure escapism, trying everything out and, you know, just meeting as many people she wants. I think with Kelly, the emphasis on like escaping is more her being kind of like, oh, I'm just fun. I'm going to die soon. I might as well just get to do all the things I want and just have a good time. And she says that at the start, doesn't she? She's just like, I'm here just here for a good time. I don't want anything else.
Something about Yorkie that she hasn't experienced life, so she's kind of being inducted into it, that is a bit like Donal Gleeson's
They call him Ash and then Ashbot on the internet, like the Ash and Ashbot afterwards, which I love. And he's like a baby. He doesn't know how to react to things. And Hayley Atwell's character has to teach him. And I think Yorkie is a bit like that. There's something about this innocent character that doesn't know how life works, and they've got someone around who tries to teach them. There's something very affecting about those kinds of characters as well. You really care about how it's going to work out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a softness and a sensitivity to Yorkie. You know, she's been so kind of sheltered and, well, she robbed of her life experience, that when she gets this opportunity to kind of branch out and live a life that she was denied, you know, it's like there's so many options. There's so many things to choose from. And also there's a sense that she wants to take it all in, but doesn't know where to start. You know what I mean?
Yorkie is a bit like Ashbot in that sense, that she needs to learn about life. She never got to live it. And so she walks around like wide-eyed like a child.
Yeah.
And Kelly's the one...
Even the way she dresses, you can see it. She's like, she's literally a child. She doesn't really know what side was going on.
Yeah. It's a really nice... Like, taking the idea further of Be Right Back. What did it feel like when you saw the twist, when it went from that beautiful neon world to the grey kind of assisted living facility and the nurse with older Kelly, who looks so much like younger Kelly?
Oh, the casting is so good.
Yeah.
It was as all the little bits got explained. So as you found out about Greg, and as you found out about the Shan Juniper, like, programme, and all that sort of the words dropping in, then I was like, then it all starts to piece together. And I was like, actually, this is such a lovely idea.
Did you meet Charlie much, like, during the filming or before, or how did he...
He was on set in England, but while we were filming in South Africa, he was prepping and filming for Screen Wipe. So he wasn't around much in South Africa. But my first day I'm trying to remember if my first day was the Quagmire or Tucker's. I have a feeling it was Tucker's. So I met him there, and before getting lost in an absolute maze of arcade machines. There were so many arcade machines at Tucker's. There were arcade machines behind the set that they decided not to use, but just kept on hand. Like, it was insane.
You got to have a backup.
Right, I guess so. And that's a backup, like, of the backup.
Set just 101, in case, you should know that.
Just in case Bubble Bobble's not the right game to play, you've got to have Donkey Kong and everything else.
That seems like a very ex-games writer thing to do, which is nice, doesn't it? How does he do it? Well, you know, what do you think? How does he see the future? What kind of time machine does he have?
I have no idea. You know, I think... I have no idea, honestly. I mean, he's an enigma.
What do you think is the reason San Junipero, like, won 2 Emmys and is, you know, the kind of the most famous Black Mirror episode? Do you think it will stay that way even past season 4?
I think because it was the first of its kind as well, that had a big impact on it. I know it affects an LGBT side of things. I've had, like, friends of mine that said they was, like, their favourite episode for obvious reasons. Yeah. I know it's RuPaul's favourite episode.
Oh.
My friend told me that as well. She's like, it's RuPaul's favourite episode. Mentioned it on the podcast. And I was like, I will.
Yes, that's very important.
Very important.
What was it like going to the Emmys then?
That was nuts. I mean, it's like an experience that I never, you know, you always kind of dream about going to see. But I got this email from Owen, the director, just saying, hey, me and Laurie have a couple of spare tickets. Do you want to come with us? And I was like, yes. So myself and Billy Griffin Jr., who played Davis, I think he played the guy that goes up to Yorkie in the arcade.
Oh yeah, he has a crush on her. He's sweet.
Yes. And Laurie Borg and Owen Harris. Laurie was nominated with Charlie and Annabelle for the show, so they took us along, and it was nuts to be in this massive theater complex with, like, all the... You look to your right, oh, it's Julie Dreyfus. Look to your left, oh, this is Peter Sarsgaard. That's cool. All these people around you, it's nuts.
I know you did actually manage to get your hands on at least one of them, didn't you? I think I've seen a picture.
I stole Annabelle's golden statue for a second, just for a shot. We weren't sure because they had the actors sitting in a different area. I mean, you never get to see the audience really, but Charlie, Annabelle and Laurie were all, you know, close to the stage where all the nominees are. And we hadn't been able to contact them to ask, hey, so should we come up? But we'd heard through the grapevine that the Academy doesn't like this, like only the people that are nominated should come up. So only Laurie, Charlie and Annabelle. But just before our nomination was read out, I think Veep won for best comedy, I think, comedy series. And so Julia Louis-Dreyfus went up and then like 40 writers went up with her. And it was myself, there was Gugu, Mackenzie, myself, Billy and Denise Burse, who plays Elder Kelly. We were all just sitting in a row and we just looked at each other and like, guys, when are we going to get this opportunity again? If they say that we won, we have to bum rush that stage and just get up there. and then they did. They announced Black Mirror, and it was crazy. We all stood up and went over to the stage and stood behind Charlie as he accepted the award. It was crazy. Yeah, it was bizarre because I came off stage and I just remember thinking, wait, what just happened? You know, I mean, it's that stereotypical like, wow, I'm just. Can't believe what's happened, but I actually couldn't remember between, I was like 5 minutes ago, I know I was sitting in the auditorium and now I'm backstage and I have no idea what just happened. But it's just a bizarre experience, especially with those kind of award shows. It's all these kind of fandangle and like cheers and, you know, well done. And hey, they have this thing called the win. I think it's called the Winner Walk or something like that. It's some stupid name. But you go around in this loop and there's like talk show hosts at the side. And so Charlie and Annabelle would veer off at one point and do a little bit of an interview and then dip in and out of photo shoots and stuff that we had. And it's just like this kind of semicircle of all these bizarre. It's like going to a carnival, but instead of the carnival events, you've got like Jimmy Fallon booth and Jimmy Kimmel booth. And yeah, very strange.
And then how hard did you guys party afterwards?
Pretty hard. There's this thing called the Governor's Ball, which happens, which is like a sit down meal. And there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of tables. I have no idea spaces like this exist in downtown LA. It's like an aircraft hangar with massive chandeliers coming down from the ceiling and a big like circular rotating stage with an amazing band playing. And everyone goes there, like all the nominees and the winners, and they all kind of mingle and do the Hollywood thing. And then there's the after parties after that. And then there's after parties. So it just carries on going. I think Be Right Back is still my favorite episode. Overall of all time. I just think there's something about that message that just strikes a chord with me. You know, the performances by Haley and Don are just, if I could play any part, maybe Haley's part. That's such an interesting, for I guess, I mean, selfishly from an actor's point of view, that's like such a scary, daunting, but challenging role to play, of, you know, losing your loved one and then having them back but not quite having them back, and then, you know, making that choice. It's just, yeah, that Hayley Atwell's role, please, in Be Right Back, if you could make that happen.
I think I've asked like a lot of the actors I spoke to from Black Mirror this question, and Be Right Back is pretty much the one. I think it's an acting masterclass, isn't it? And often, you know, in these interviews, people have been so enthusiastic about their time on Black Mirror, because I think you're given a lot of artistic freedom and it's quite an intellectual script. It's something you really get your teeth into.
Yeah, absolutely. In my experience, it travels this very fine line of kind of collaboration and Charlie Brooker being, you know, an auteur. Like you don't want to mess with his writing. And, you know, in theatre acting, you're kind of, you're taught to come up to the plate with the writing. The writer gets the most respect. And then in a lot of TV, like working TV acting, you know, sometimes writing is done on such a tight schedule that, you know, it's a pleasure that an actor or someone else might have a suggestion that's taken on board, and it's more of a collaboration. But definitely in on this project, the collaborative element was so, like, such a fine tightrope to walk and really well respected, you know. Annabelle was there the whole time in South Africa, by the way, so like she was so it wasn't like Charlie and Annabelle weren't present, but Owen and Annabelle were always, you know, chatting and discussing the script and moving forward. And as an actor, you're always felt like it's okay to go up and say, hey, what about this, and sometimes, you know, it's useful, and sometimes they're like, yeah, well, yeah, you just do your thing. but they're always, it was a very, very respectful environment to work in.
So thanks to Harriet and to Gavin Stenhouse for joining me on the podcast today. And a huge thank you to everyone who's been listening. As I mentioned at the start, this is the last podcast we'll be putting out for a while, at least until we know what's happening in season 5. It's been an absolute joy to make these. Thank you so much for listening and for giving us feedback and for starting conversations across social media and on Reddit. And yes, for the last time, if you enjoyed this podcast, please do rate, review, subscribe, click all the stars, upload it to your consciousness, and spend eternity with your loved ones with your earphones in, listening to this podcast, if you could. But yes, thank you for listening. We've had a great time. Take care and goodbye.